Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 13, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of John, chapter 14, and it's being read by Alexander Scorby. John 14.
Chapter 14. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And whither I go, ye know, and the way ye know. Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also, and from henceforth ye know him and have seen him. Philip saith unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. Jesus saith unto him, Have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, Show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? The words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very works' sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do. Because I go unto my Father. And whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If ye shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. If ye love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another Comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth. Whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. Yet a little while, and the world seeth me no more, but ye see me. Because I live, ye shall live also. And that day ye shall know that I am in my Father, and ye in me, and I in you. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him, and will manifest myself to him. Judas saith unto him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself unto us, and not unto the world? Jesus answered and said unto him, If a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him, and make our abode with him. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and the word which ye hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me. These things have I spoken unto you, being yet present with you. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things, and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I have said unto you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled. neither let it be afraid. Ye have heard how I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If ye loved me, ye would rejoice, because I said, I go unto the Father, for my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it come to pass, that when it is come to pass, ye might believe. Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh, and hath nothing in me. But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do. Arise, let us go hence.
All right. I'm not sure. Do we have any announcements or any questions, Jan? And maybe before we start that, just make a couple of notes here. I did finish my book today. I started to upload it into Amazon. And it's probably going to tie. I was unable to finish getting it up there, but hopefully the next day or two it'll be available. What else? We did meet today, the national leadership, and we're looking for anybody who wants to volunteer as a national leader, working with others, primarily, you know, connecting with the committees of safety throughout the United States, and to continue to help those people build those committees of safety. That is the key to save our republic. There is no other way. I think that's all I have. Jan, do we have any questions or any other announcements?
Well, I would just like to remind people that we have exceeded 10,000 members now. We're up to 10,019 members, so we've kind of crossed over a hurdle, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
I do have two questions, if you'd like to take questions now.
Yeah. Well, let me just make one other point here. You know, I've been asked to go into the radio tonight at 11 o'clock. It's 104.1 FM here in New York, coming out of Woodstock. I was told that it has a broadcast of a 200-mile radius, so it's a pretty big area that it covers. So if anybody that's within that basic area, within 200 miles of Woodstock, New York, it's 104.1 FM. Okay, yeah, what questions do you have, Jan?
Okay, this first one comes up in various forms. This form is, what does NLA know about nationalassembly.net?
Yeah, nationalassembly.net, you know, we don't really like to talk negative about any buddy or any groups, but, you know, in this case, I perceive, you know, the people who run that, particularly Anna von Ritz, she kind of surfaced not long after we started forming grand juries. In the beginning, we didn't really understand it that well, and we started to try to form grand juries, but we quickly realized you can't form grand juries, and a grand jury is going to act and continue to act. And where do you go from there? And then we come to realize what we need to do is form administrators. But in any event, and those administrators, we need five people in each county, four administrators particularly, and one paralegal. And a paralegal would also fill in as an administrator, so there'd be five per county. It'd be paid positions. The people need to take control of this. Obviously, the courts, particularly the Bar Association, the bar judges, the bar lawyers, and all of these, I think they're called, they're called by different names in different places, which is really a group of lawyers that will orientate the jury, and ultimately they end up stacking the jury. They're really orientating them into the civil law, and the judge continues in the same fashion. And that has to stop, because that's not how common law proceeds. Common law has nothing to do with civil law. Sometimes we do deal with equity within common law courts, depending, You know, if an individual is working for a government agency or commercial, doing some commercial activity on a federal level, maybe an interstate commercial activity, or on a state level, you know, commercial activity within the state. You know, we would be involved with that kind of thing, and equity would come into play in that, in whether it be a criminal case or whatever the case may be. But as long as it's a court of record where a jury is involved, then, you know, again, it's got to be controlled by the people. So we, the people, you know, need to take that over. But in any event, Anna von Ritz, she started groups and connected with some other people, and they're creating a shadow government, ultimately, is what they're doing. They do not believe that this that constitution that we have is sufficient, and they plan on wanting to rewrite that constitution. That's a major problem. They self-appoint themselves as judges and different power structures, different individuals, offices of the court. It's a group that really has gotten a lot of people in trouble. You know, we've had some people that broke away from National Liberty Alliance to follow them, and they got themselves in trouble. One individual died down in Florida. He was put in jail, and he died in jail. And we had a small group of people out west that also fell prey to these individuals, and they ended up getting arrested. It was about six of them. So really, it's subversion against the United States, what they're doing. It's a very dangerous thing to get involved with those people. You know, we here at National Liberty Alliance, we're following the common law. We're following court procedure. We're not doing anything crazy and silly, just doing the work of the people. That is authority. We have the authority from the common law, from the Constitution, ultimately. We the people ordained and established this Constitution. So we have a lot of authority, of course, and of course we're building committees of safety, which is a major part of what we're doing, because the committees of safety are really grassroots level on a county level, and they need to be connecting with the people, dealing with the people's problems, and also working with the administrators for the grand jury. The committees of safety also is the committee man, the unelected committee man, the true committee man, not statutory. Those committee men that are claimed to be elected, they're not elected anyway, but they claim to be. In any event, they follow statutory processes and party rules, and it just sets one end against the other, and they never accomplish nothing. It just divides people. So what we're doing is very, very much different. We're working within the process, within the justice process, within the common law. And they've gone outside. We are not compatible with them. We've had many people talk with us and tried to connect with us with that kind of thing, but we're not compatible with them, and we can't connect with them. Anybody that belongs to those groups that would want to come, you know, work with us and work with the people in the committees of safety, of course, they're welcome to do so. But we cannot pollute what we're doing with these ideas that they had put together. Particularly Anna von Ritz seems to have, again, put this whole thing together, so it appears anyway. Clearly someone is behind her, and she's got money behind her, because, again, she came up not long after we started doing what we're doing, and all of a sudden she seemed to be everywhere. And so, anyway, we're not compatible with them. All right, next question.
Okay.
And anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and, of course, hit your button to get into the queue if you're on an app. Go ahead.
Okay. I have completed all the courses in order to become an administrator and printed the vow and have purchased the book, but there are no COSs anywhere close to me for me to join. Any help would be greatly appreciated.
Well, we have to take the bull by the horns, each and every one of us. Every single one of us, any person hearing my voice and listening in, you need to get involved with the Committee of Safety. If there is not a Committee of Safety in your county, start one. Go sign up and start building a Committee of Safety. If you don't want to take a leadership role, on the general committee, but you know, you could pass it to someone else as soon as you get a few people together. But we do not have a lot of committees of safety out there. I forget the count that we had counted a while back. And we're going to start, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start getting reports from the leadership and who are communicating or should be communicating with the committees of safety and helping them to advance and to start other committees of safety in other counties and so on and so forth. And we'll start getting some reports from them of what states and how many committees of safety in different states and so on and so forth. But it takes everyone to do this. Get out there and start what you have. And we're all learning on this. We're all going to the School of Hard Knocks on this. It's okay to make mistakes, and all we need to do is correct ourselves when we discover those mistakes and continue pressing towards the mark, which ultimately is taking back our government from the grassroots level. We the people, government by consent. So we will be given certificates for those people who are going to become administrators for the grand jury. In order to get a certificate that qualifies you for that position, you have to have taken all of our courses. I believe we have 5 courses up there altogether. But you have to take all of our courses or at least be in the process of taking those courses. We will have a book. Again, I have started on that book, but it's not ready yet. And it doesn't need to be ready, you know, right away. But soon we're going to have that book in position, in place. It'll be a handbook for the administrators. We have to follow, you know, process and procedure ourselves. We have to make sure that all of us act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. We have to train the juries to come up and understand the same thing. At the end of the day, when the jury makes a decision, they have to, the final thing they need to do before they make that final decision is consider mercy if they're moving towards a guilty in a criminal case. But we have to be educated. It would be a wrongdoing for we here at National Liberty Alliance to assist anyone in becoming a grand jury group or administrators for a jury if we don't require an education and to understand, you know, what our job is and, you know, how things work. I would think anybody that becomes an administrator for the jury, of course, you know, the book Government by Consent is essential. The handbook is essential. And I really do believe this book that I put together for court access and the common law also is essential, because that will really give you an understanding how the court system works and how the pleadings work and the purpose of the pleadings and how that process works and all the different motions that take place, building the case, and then eventually, once all of the pleadings are done, then you go to trial. And you can't bring anything into the trial that hasn't been brought into the pleadings. Now, of course, that's a basic rule, a fundamental rule, but there's an exception to every rule. So there are times when something is discovered in the middle of the trial and it can be brought in. I'm not sure on the process with that. As a matter of fact, maybe when Brent talks, maybe he can kind of school us a little on that idea on, you know, what would be rejected. I mean, we do know if you should have known something that you bring into and should have been brought into the pleadings and it should have been, you know, brought to the other side and then all of a sudden you try to bring it in to sandbag someone in the middle of the trial, that, of course, is not acceptable. But it's interesting to try to understand what are the rules that might apply that would render things being brought in after the trial started that would be acceptable. And again, I would think it's mostly pretty much just something that's a new discovery and the other side can't prove in any way that you knew that beforehand. And I think that is probably the key. But again, when Brent hopefully is listening in, when he gets up, maybe he could talk a little bit about that. We do have people who are out there doing, you know, their own thing and jumping the gun without a proper education. I try to talk them out of doing that. It's not the way to go. We have to be careful. We're not acting with anger, trying to get even, haphazardly going after someone, because then we only become them. And of course, that's a problem. All right, what else you got?
That's the last question, John.
Okay. Brent, if you're listening in, I don't know if you want to make a comment on what I was talking about. And if anybody wants to get into the queue, again, if you're coming in through a phone, star 6 and 1. And if you're coming in off of your browser or an app, there is a button to push to get into the queue and to also turn your mic on and off, I guess. Brent, are you there? Brent may be away from his computer right now. Okay, again, anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time to get into the queue. There's a couple of people. I was going to talk a little bit about Jefferson today, but I've been so busy trying to get this book done. I think I mentioned earlier that the book is done, and it'll be uploaded very soon, and I'm working on all of that right now. So next couple of days,
there?
It should be up there. Yep, I'm here.
John,
go right ahead.
Well,
you came in twice, I see, huh?
I did. I got right when you said, Brent, do you have anything that you want to add? It knocked me out. So here I am.
Okay.
But what I understood the subject to be was what's fair. Is it fair to allow the other side, one side, to surprise the other one in a trial? Was that...
Well, yeah, generally speaking, what would be the process? If you're in the middle of a trial... obviously, all the pleadings have been done, and then you've discovered something brand new, and you want to bring it into evidence. What would be the proper way to go with that? Would it be to try to get an audience with the judge on the other side and talk about it before you actually bring it up, and what reasons would the judge be able to apply to prevent that evidence from coming in? Other than the fact that you didn't know about it before. You knew about it before, but you didn't bring it in, and that, I guess, would have to be proved. But go ahead.
Well, if you should have known, you did know or you should have known about the evidence, if the judge is doing his job, he'll say, well, no, that's not coming in. But it all depends upon what the judge is willing to do. And you can do in the courtroom whatever the judge says you can do. That's the bottom line. It may be lawful, it may be unlawful, but if you think you're right, you bring it up and you press it forward for whatever reason. If it's a key to the case, the judge has to make that decision. He has a lot of discretionary power at that level. So there's no machine-like justice. There's nothing you can do to say, okay, I'm gonna pull this lever and turn this dial and see what a judge would do. If there's anything I've learned over the years is that judges are not machines, and judges are wound up and bound up with whims and difficulties probably more than the people that are in the court. And every juror is that way too. And so when you deal with a judge, you just push. If you think you're right, you make a motion to the court. You'd ask how to do it. You've got evidence that has recently arisen. There's no way you could have known about it before the trial began. You make a motion to the court, and of course that would also be provided to the other side, and you make all those arguments. There's no way I could have known this. I didn't know this until this happened, or I didn't know this until the other side brought it up, or somebody had hidden it from me, or whatever. You know, I've been with people who said, I didn't know this till I saw it on the nightly news. You know, and then the judge said, you know, I didn't either. So let's think about this and talk about it. But then the judge would want to do it in such a way that it wouldn't be unfair to the other side. And unfairness, you can boil all due process down. This is due process. We're talking not about what to do, what the result will be. We're talking about how to go about trying the case. And when it's all said and done, the other side has to have meaningful notice of what's going on and a meaningful opportunity to respond to what's going on. Blindsiding the other party and not giving them sucker punching them and not giving them a chance to regain their footing so they can take a swing too, well, that's unfair. people should think about a trial in the courts like you'd think about a boxing match, and you've all seen heavyweight boxing matches. There are certain things that are not allowed because it takes away the fairness of the fight. If the fight is not fair, that doesn't mean the fight is equal. We don't use the word equal. We use the word fair. Is the fight fair? If the fight is fair, then due process has been followed. And that means notice to the other side and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. For example, if you want to bring in evidence that you hadn't brought up before the trial, you'd make a motion to the court. That means file a piece of paper, give to the court, and give another copy to the other side and look and say, look, here's what happened. And I move this court respectfully to allow me to make an argument. Sometimes it's called a proffer of evidence. A proffer. That means offer. Why they say proffer, I don't know. But to put it forward as an offer, I guess, is what proffer means. And you make a motion to the court. I've made motions to the court where I proffered evidence in camera and said, look, Judge, I don't want to offer this evidence so that he can see it right now. I want for example, my client didn't know what was going on, didn't understand the danger he was in, and he's going to take the Fifth Amendment. He's had things subpoenaed from him that he is not going to produce under the protection of the Fifth Amendment. Well, I don't think your man's entitled to Fifth Amendment protection. He's not in real criminal accusatory danger of a crime. Well, then, Judge, I want to come into your chambers without the other side, and I want to explain to you with my client why he believes he's entitled to the Fifth. And I don't want the other side there, because if the other side is there, then that'll tell him things and make public things I don't want to be public. And your client doesn't have to be guilty to do that. You know, if there's anything that could lead a prosecutor possibly to indict your client or yourself, you might want to make a proffer. But that's just one small, narrow example of the idea. The idea is you get a motion before the court and you say, I've got a witness or I've got evidence, or this witness just came to me and told me that he has evidence that none of us could have known about. We didn't even know he was there. We didn't know he saw anything. We don't even know the guy's name. Where'd he come from? But I've talked to him. He did see what happened. He saw it. He heard it. And he wants to testify, and I want him to testify, and we'll give the other side reasonable notice. Then you would argue when you file, you say, number one, we had no way of knowing that this evidence existed. Number two, this is not an unfair advantage to the other side. It has to be done in a way that is fair, and you have to argue this is not unfair that we're doing this, and all those kinds of things. But there are standards in the court. If you start looking on the internet, just do research on the internet, type in some keywords, how do I get evidence in that I didn't present before the court, you probably get more websites with more information than you know what to do with. Back to you, John.
Okay, thanks, Brent. And I'm sure you can, if the judge makes the wrong decision and you believe that, you can appeal it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, and again, it's really the magistrate. All judges are magistrates. And, they do need to make a lot of decisions in the court system as the motions are moving forward and things. He becomes a traffic cop. But again, if he makes the wrong decision, you can appeal it up the system. And that's why, we really need to get courts of justice. We haven't had courts of justice in America for a long time. Maybe there are a few places here and there throughout the states that are going forward properly. I haven't seen any. I'm in New York, and I haven't seen any here. So they're all lost on the civil law. They're lost on the rules that they had made up and no longer working on, through common law or working on the rules through the rules of common law.
Hey, John, do you happen to remember a heavyweight boxer that contended for the title 40 years ago or more? His name was Tex Cobb.
Cobb, I heard Cobb before, yes.
C-O-B-B. Well, he was a fellow that contended for the heavyweight championship, and he was from a little town in Texas, and he was always happy. You know, he never was vindictive. But he was so tough when he got in the ring that I forget what the fellow's name was. He was heavyweight champion. He fought several of them. He pounded him for 16 rounds. And this guy, I don't think, landed a punch. And this guy landed every punch that he swung. And he couldn't knock him out. He tried and tried. Howard Cosell was there, and he said he was never going to report on another boxing match again because this is too brutal. And the guy, of course, his face took quite a beating in all this and messed him up. But he never quit. He had a jaw made of concrete. Nobody could knock him out. Well, as brutal as it all was, here's the point I'm driving at. As brutal as that was, it was done according to the rules. I remember the fellow that was fighting him just backed off and played with him because he didn't want to hurt him. He realized he couldn't knock him out no matter how many times he hit him. Funny that he's gone into obscurity. He was a man like boxing had never seen before because you couldn't knock him out. But that's the way trials are. Common law trials can be brutal and bloody messes. But even though they're that way, they must be according to the rules, just like when Tex Cobb used to fight. Some of you are probably looking him up as I'm talking. By the way, he got into movies later, and he was in that movie with Gene Hackman called Uncommon Valor. Yeah, Uncommon Valor. He was one of the main characters in that movie. But he didn't last long in the movies, really. But I'm making the point, when you go into court, it's going to be fair. It's got to be fair, and it's up to us that go into court to insist upon that fairness. That's what our common law is. You can summarize our common law in fairness, a fair fight, notice, and an opportunity to be heard that is meaningful. All those sum up all of our common law. And if you're not a fighting's one thing, but common law says it's got to be a fair fight. According to the Queensbury rules of boxing, for example. What, no matter what. But it doesn't mean it's going to be nice, it's going to be even, it's going to be emotionally. No, it gets messy, it gets crazy, and like you were saying, things do arise in the courts that are surprising to everybody, and the courts and the parties then have to readjust. They want to make motions to readjust, and a good trial it'll turn into a mess. It'll turn into a mess with the judge trying to maintain the fair play of order. And if it doesn't verge on a mess, then the parties haven't engaged and the truth will not be known. That's the whole idea behind our common law. The rest of the world's not that way. They just trade papers back and forth. Everything's nice and calm and civilized and makes you think of monks in dusty libraries. That's what, and candles. I mean, that's how they do it. But then, of course, they're brutal. On the other hand, when they throw people in prison and torture them and all those kind of things, so they don't have cross-examination. You know, our common law is just rife with all those kinds of ways to protect us, but to not protect us ultimately from the truth. That's what our common law lays bare. The other side, the rest of the world, they count on torture to lay bare the truth. We count on cross-examination. Now, cross-examination can be brutal, and anybody that's been under 5 or 6 hours of it will tell you it's pretty brutal. But it's still according to the rules, and without the parties engaging and taking some serious slugs and punches, the truth will not bob forth, because the truth, according to the rottenness, the fundamental rottenness of human nature, will almost always be hidden. And you've got to find ways to trick it out of people, to confuse them, to get it out. And that's done according to the rules. Back to you, John.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. All right. I just wanted to check that button because someone asked me if I'm pretty sure I remember turning the recording on, but, you know, I put my cursor on the record button. It doesn't say stop recording. It says record. So I just wanted to make sure we are recording. Okay. That's it, Jen. I hit the wrong button. Well, I'm confused on this one.
Yes, that was all I had, John.
Okay, let me turn that back on. There were people in the queue. Please get back in as soon as I can hit the button to turn that back in again. Q&A. All right, whoever was in the queue, Please get back in if anybody else wants to get into the queue. Get into the queue. Okay, we got one person in the queue right now. We'll take the first caller. We got two in there now. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, feel free to do so. Okay, let us take Douglas, it looks like, 609 area code. What state you're from, Doug? Doug, you've been unmuted. 609 area code. Maybe that's the last name. Looks like Anita. Anita Douglas, maybe? You may be muted on your end. You're unmuted on this end. Okay, I guess we lost that person. All right, well, no, you're still unmuted. Go ahead. Is that Anita? 609, phone number 367.
Looks muted on my end, John.
Is it? All right, let me try another way. Well, I don't know. All right, let me try another way to do that. Let me just click next.
Hello.
Question. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes, yes. I'm going through a court case right now. I'm a Christian. I'm a born-again Christian. I'm a street preacher, and I was rebuking someone while out street preaching who was making sexually obscene gestures. And the person filed a charge against me called bias intimidation, which is completely against our First Amendment, anti-free speech, freedom of religion. And so right now I've been fighting a legal battle. And would there be any way that your organization could help me in my legal battle and your contributions in common law? Maybe I could, you know, would it be possible for me to file a lawsuit even?
Well, sure. You can do a counter suit. You know, whatever charges are brought up, you can always do a counter suit in any event. And we don't do that per se. We are, you know, in the courts, particularly focusing in on judges. You know, especially on the federal level, but all levels. You know, with all these non-judicial foreclosures going through and habeas corpuses when someone's in jail and hasn't had a day in court, they haven't had due process. And
so it is possible to
follow. We'd do something, let me just finish off. We would do something like that. But our focus is really dealing with enemies, foreign and domestic, within, particularly in our court system, but also within the government anywhere. We are teaching people a lot of things, and I just finished writing a book, Court Access and the Common Law. So if you wanted to learn how to go through the process, write the papers, do a counterclaim, and all that stuff, this book will assist you. And then again, you know, we can only get so much involved in conversation on this because, you know, we're here to discuss a lot of things and really try to build communities of safety and get people educated and communicating together and that kind of thing.
Access to the common law, is that in the store? Is that free or?
No, it'll be out this week. I'm going through the process right now of publishing it. I'm self-publishing this book. And so I'm going to be doing that up on Amazon. And the book is done now, and I'm in the process of trying to upload it and get everything together. Hey, Brent, I don't know if you had a chance yet to take a look at the papers I sent you. Mm-hmm. I sent you a copy of my manuscript.
I
would definitely be interested in the book. One thing I would like to ask is how would I start a committee of safety in Burlington County?
Hey, hang on one second, right? Yeah, go ahead, Brent. What were you saying, Brent?
I was saying I did not see that it arrived. You're going to send it in
I sent it kind of late, so it went out, I don't know, very late afternoon, very early evening, probably. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've gotten it now, but
I'll look at it.
Yeah, just take a look. If you didn't get it, just let me know, and I'll try to send it again. But yeah, I sent it to one of those large file things, you know.
Okay.
So. Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. Going back to the individual, what's your first name? Are you Douglas?
Wesley, sir. Anita's my mom's name. It's the phone caller ID.
Okay. All right. All right. So. What were you saying now, the second part of that? You get the book. Yeah, I don't know what the book is going to cost yet because I haven't gotten to that part of the process with Amazon. I should, by next Monday, I should be making the announcement. I probably will, as soon as the book is up, I'll send an email out to the membership here and let it be known that the book is finally out and it's available for anybody who wants to purchase it.
Definitely. And so it could even teach me how to file I'm not sure how to pronounce it, I-L-L-I-E-N-S or
Lien? Well, it doesn't really get, I don't think I have much on it. It does talk about liens a little bit, but I haven't gotten too much into the liens. A lien is something, it's pretty simple, a lien. First of all, you have to go through due process. You have to win a court case in order to go forward with a lien. The only lien you can do without going through a court case is what's called a mechanics lien. And there's a certain, criteria and rules for that. I know here in New York.
Is that for a mechanic, like a bad mechanic?
Well, it's called mechanic lien. It's really someone out in there working. It could be a contractor doing a job and didn't get paid.
The individual involved was apparently running a contracting business or a real estate business that I was out there preaching. And, I had no idea. I'm not even sure it seems like he was the one who pressed the charges, but what if the police officer actually pressed the charges?
Well, then it would be criminal if the police was doing something, and the charges, in order to be, you have to be indicted if it's a criminal thing, and if there's no indictment, then there's no criminal charge. I know a lot of these town courts and village courts and a lot of judges, they think, well, if it's under, you're going to get under a year, we don't have to get the indictment. Well, that's a lie from hell. You cannot lose your liberty. Even for a year or even for a day, they can't do that. They have to go through the process, and that requires an indictment. So if you haven't been indicted or there is no charge.
They did indict me. In fact, it's funny, they never arrested me. They did it after the fact. I was never brought in for any kind of questioning to get my side of the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not there to look at it. They only respond to the complaint. And, If that happened to me, the first thing I would do is I'd call the sheriff, bring the sheriff in to see if you can get that settled. Because you're right, it sounds pretty bad that you would be arrested.
Should I call the Burlington County Sheriff?
Well, you could talk to him and see ask him what all this means and tell him your story and if there's anything he could do. But you're saying you were indicted, though?
I got a leaflet in the mail that asked me to appear in a Zoom court, quote unquote.
Oh, well, that's a court. That has nothing to do with an indictment. Okay. And again, it's probably a Zoom court, you said? Probably a village or town. And
Burlington County Court.
It's a county.
I was sent to several different courts, several different judges. It got ridiculous. And it's still ridiculous. And I have not gotten a speedy trial. Some ways I'm almost glad because, I can still fight these people. I had to pay this lawyer exorbitant amounts of money, and he's still extorting me for money, this lawyer here. I mean, I'm trying to be very charitable about it, but, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, look, it is a problem. If you're going to go into court, you need to participate in your case. I know they try to prevent you from doing that. Me personally, I would not hire a lawyer to represent me. I might hire a lawyer for counsel. I might hire a lawyer to sit in court with me and speak when I permit him to speak on certain issues, possibly that maybe I feel he'd be better off talking about. But generally speaking, I would control my own. Hold on. Generally speaking, I would control my own case because no one knows your case better than you. But the thing is if you're ignorant to how things work, that's a problem. And we should have known. We should have been taught this in school. Every single child should have been taught in school how the court system works, and it should be part of the school curriculum just as much as civics or the common law, the Constitution. All of this should have been taught in school. And that, of course, court access should have been taught in school. So we need to take it upon ourselves to become educated in this on our own. And I think this book accomplishes it. You know, I would say, first of all, the book I'm doing, it's going to be a hardcover book because, you know, the book is really, my suggestion to anyone that wants to really learn this stuff is to actually read it like a book. You can read through this like a book. Start from page one and read all the way through to the end. And that gives you the, you know, a basic appreciation for, you know, the nuts and bolts and what's involved. And then it's used pretty much, and reading through a second time, of course, works out well. I mean, the more times you read through a book, if you're studying, the more you pull in and draw and comprehend and pick up that you didn't pick up before, and it sinks in a little deeper, you know, the more time you spend with something and chew it up a little bit, you know. But generally speaking, the book will act really as a very powerful reference book. Because, you know, the table of contents will help lead you through these things. But it will be a hard-covered book because it'll be a book that you'll probably, especially if you really, you know, really want to learn the law, you're going to be in and out of this book a lot. And a paperback-type book, I think it'll fall apart a lot quicker. A hard-covered book has a better binder, and it'll last longer and keep together longer. It will be a hardcover book. It's a long book. It's I think it's close to 700 pages. I forget exactly.
And the title is?
Court Access and the Common Law. I'll be sending a letter out to everyone, all the members, and I'll announce it next Monday here.
I'm not sure if I'm a member yet because I signed up. I made an account online.
With NLA?
I'm to call my district guy.
You are a member. If you came in and signed up, you became a member. If you look in, you'll see you logged in, and you'll see if you go to your onto the page, you'll see my account on the top right hand side underneath the blue bar. Mm-hmm. I am sharing my screen. You wanted to know about how to find out about getting the Committee of Safety going.
Yes. I tried to make an. I mean, I'm. I have an account, but I don't know how to add my contact information on the phone number section.
Well, once you become a member, there's a lot of questions that you're asked, and then you'll get an approval letter, and then you'll be able to come in and log in. And every once in a while, you may come in not being logged in, and there'll be a reminder telling you that it's a friendly reminder you're not logged in. But if you're watching, my desktop right now, I'm showing you where you can find some information.
How do I watch the desktop? I'm kind of new to this.
Huh?
How do I watch your desktop? Is that like on the meeting app?
Yeah, it depends. How are you coming in, on phone or app?
Yeah,
or
on phone, via phone.
Is it an app on a phone or just a telephone call? It looks like it's just a telephone call. Yeah, then you can't see. You have to come in on an app. You can come in on a browser. There's a few ways you can come in onto the call here, or you can just come in on the phone and listen, which is what you're doing right now, so you can't see the desktop that I'm sharing. But if you go onto the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, on the blue bar, you highlight Start a Committee of Safety. If you click on that button right there, there's a breadcrumb trail from that point forward to lead you through that, and it is also a breadcrumb trail leading you through the education, which is the tab right next to that. So if you click on either one of those two, one to lead you through a proper education, the other one leads you through the Committee of Safety process. But if you look,
am I the only person in South Jersey that's in the National Liberty?
No, we've got a lot of people in Jersey. But in any event,
I don't know anyone else who could help me with this. I'd like to meet up with some like-minded people.
Yeah, but bear in mind, most people that are joining with us don't know court access, and they don't know how the courts operate, and they're not educated either. And again, this is something we all need to do. It is a shame that you have to depend completely on a lawyer that will hit you for a lot of money. These bar attorneys, they can be pretty vicious to you.
They said this guy's one of the good ones. Like,
Well, they know, you know, the thing is you're stuck and you don't have much of a choice, but you still, even look at the next time, you need to be able to defend yourself. But in any event, yeah. You highlight the Committee of Safety just in order to find out if there's a Committee of Safety in your area. Highlight the Committee of Safety, you come down a few levels down and you click on Find Your County Committee of Safety. So you click on that. Find your county.
Well, there was no Burlington County Committee of Safety. I guess I would have to start one.
Well, let's go in here. I'll tell you in a minute what's going on in your state. You click on New Jersey, for instance. You're in New Jersey? Okay.
Yes, correct.
In New Jersey, we have 195 members in New Jersey. There are 21 counties in New Jersey. And there are four committees of safety in New Jersey. One is Allegheny County, Bergen County, Essex County, and Monmouth County. Those are the four counties that have become active. If you want to get involved with a committee of safety, you can come up here and the top of this page, the page before this.
I called up the Essex County William. He said he would work with me.
He's a different county?
Essex County. He's on the COS.
Okay. Well, you know, if you see a committee of safety that's already started and it's in the county next door and you don't mind traveling,
it's a beginning. It's in like North Jersey, but I mean,
well,
I'm
if you did go, it's a beginning to get connected. You're going to be connecting county to county as time goes on. Anyway, you can see how they're doing it, and you might find other people that are also visiting. And then a couple of people can start your other county. But you should be where you can be working with other counties. It's a good way to start to kind of get your feet wet and things. If one is starting up and you can want to go there and see how things are going. If you want, you can sign up. And when you sign up, your first name and your phone number will show up. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then you can start trying to get people to, you know, connect with you to have a first meeting. It takes a little time, but you do some meetings on the phone and maybe in coffee here or there. You may not necessarily have a formal meeting in the beginning, two or three people getting together, planning. Next thing you know, four or five people planning, six, seven, eight people planning, and then it's time now. Okay, hey, look, we've got 8 or 10 people here. Why don't we now really connect with as many Liberty groups as we can find? NLA will send you a list of all the people in your state, giving you a first name and a phone number for those individuals. And you can call the people up in your county or your county's next door, and you can invite them to your first meeting.
So if I form a Burlington County, you'll send me a list of members in Burlington County?
Yeah, if you ask, we'll send you a list of members in all of Jersey, if you want. If you just want that county.
I would love that, sir. I would love that.
Yeah, and we don't give emails, just a phone number and a name, first name and a phone number.
Yes, sir, yes. Is it okay if I plug my number on the call?
On the what?
Is it okay if I plug my number? I don't know how to post it on the, I tried on my account. I don't know how to access it. Because I clicked my account.
Oh, so you want to know how to put your name up there in your county?
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, well, if you look on the top bar, you'll see right underneath the blue bar, you'll see My Account. If you don't see My Account, then you can also see it underneath on the far right side, Log Out. If you don't see those two things, My Account and Log Out, that means...
I see my account log out. I clicked my account. Now what do I do?
Okay. So if you click your account, you come to the page. Again, let me say, find your county committee of safety. Under start a committee of safety, come down and click on find your county committee of safety. So that's the first thing you do. Now you come down to that page and read to this page very carefully. And it says to take on the responsibility, follow the steps below. Click on my account, which is just above the blue under the blue menu bar. Once you do that, you click on Edit, step 2. Step 3, click Contact Information. Confirm, check to make sure your phone number is correct and that your county is spelled correctly. Number 4, check the box. There's a little box, you put a little tick in it. Check the box, COS County Leader. Click Save at the bottom of the page, then go back to your state and confirm that your information appears on the list. If you have any problems, you can contact Carl at nationallibertyalliance.org. for technical assistance. Jan, we should probably put another, while Carl's not around for a while.
Well, the click edit, right, and then click contact info. Where I don't see where contact info is. Oh, wait, no, now I see it. I see it. It's contact information. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, just follow that process, and then it's a matter of really, you know, sort of networking with people, your friends, family, neighbors, small groups, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of Liberty groups. You visit, you know, Rod and Gun Club, maybe. You know, and you talk to them about what you're doing. Introduce them to the National Liberty Alliance. Tell them you're working on a, you want to build a committee of safety. You'd like to invite the people to a first meeting to introduce them. We have plenty of things to teach how to introduce. If you come up under start a committee of safety, and again, what you really want to do is click on that first button and then follow the, you know, sort of the breadcrumb trail. But we have handbooks and tools, so it's a few down, you click on that, and then you will find out, for instance, here's a committee of safety charter, how to create one. We have a committee of safety committee man handbook, that's for the general committee. Everybody is a committee man, ultimately. Organization of the Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook, which is a step-by-step. It's about 100 pages. I think it's about 100 pages. Let me click on that one.
It appears I have added my number, so anyone who's interested is free to contact me.
Okay.
And we could, you know, learn together as I form this safety committee of safety.
What you want to do is come to that handbook page and then click on Common Law. Click on COS Organizing Handbook. That's Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. It'll open up a PDF handbook, 71 pages, and it starts from the beginning and takes you right to the end. It explains exactly step by step on what you need to do to get a Committee of Safety going. And remember, look it, we're all going to the School of Hard Knocks in this thing. We're all learning. We don't have to know everything. Matter of fact, you don't have to know nothing. This is the beginning of your new education, the beginning of learning, the beginning of organizing. And the thing is when you make a mistake, then fix the mistake. Don't continue in it. That's all. It's that simple. You get a lot of advice. You can come here to the meeting and ask for advice and information. Look at 2, 3, 4 people come together. You got 2, 3, 4 heads coming together. As someone say, hey, I read this and this, we should be doing that. Oh, this, you work it out, you know, you'll get it. Fumble around. Everything I've ever done, I fumbled around. I'm self-taught in everything. You know, I never really went far.
Yeah, is it possible for me to print the handbook out or to sell, or even to sell, buy it is what I meant. Like,
No, it's free. You can rent, you can just print this out. This, I will be posting a handbook. I'll be posting a handbook. I've got a grand jury handbook that's up on Amazon. Okay,
yeah.
Let me go back to the page here. If you come over to under the welcome tab, okay, I just put this page up here, and you come down. Let's see, where is this? Books by John Darash. If you click on that, okay, here's where you find all the books that I've written. I've Government by Consent, which is available. Right now in the bookstores and in up on Amazon. And you can go directly to my publisher to buy it. There's a link on the page. You just read the information, follow it. You know, again, breadcrumb trails. The second book, which one we're talking about, is called Court Access and the Common Law. You know, you can read a little bit about it. It's 716 pages. But it's 716 pages of a book 8.5 by 11. So it's a big book. It's not a smaller book, you know, like 9 by 5 or whatever it is that the other book is. Then the pocket handbooks will be available soon. There is a grand jury handbook up there. I don't want to really push too much because on these that grand jury handbook, I want to go review it and I may update it before I want people to go up and download it. But you can get the grand jury updated copy of the grand. All these handbooks are available in PDF. You don't have to buy them. You can go to, you know, again, over to.
Thank you. I'm going to try to come to more calls next Monday. I'm going to try to show up. But I do need to get going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But this has been very interesting. It's been a learning experience for me.
All right. And, well, I'm going to continue talking a little bit about the books for other people so they know.
Sure. Thank you.
But we have we got the handbooks here that I'm going to be posting. I know the grand jury handbook is only $5, but it's a pocket handbook, and you don't have to buy it. You can get it for free on the PDF download. But if you want one that you can stick in your top pocket or your back pocket, and you have a pocket handbook, it's like a constitutional handbook. If you want that, I'm all of these handbooks are going to be created into this, and I'm going to try to do that this week. It's going to be my big focus this week is to get all these handbooks, which are already written. I just want to proofread them, and then I'll post them up. And I could probably post them all up in one day now that I know how to work the process of posting a book up. I had done this a couple of years ago, and I'd forgotten I'd done it. And but this book here, I'll be getting up, and I you know kind of went through it again, so I could do it pretty good and pretty quickly now. But so those handbooks, those pocket handbooks, will probably only be about $5 a piece. The one that's 71 pages, it depends on what they charge. I may have to charge $8 or $10 for that one. I don't know. But again, you can get it all for free if you don't want to get a handbook. Whatever people want to do, it's up to them. But I do want to make that available, those books. And so they'll be on this page. Under the Welcome tab, come down to, what does it say, Books by John Darash. Click on that. And I will put the links in here. This is kind of still under construction, this page, because I don't have links in here yet. The only link I have is on the Government by Consent book. So if you clicked on that or on the right-hand side of a website, you can read a lot of information about that book and then purchase it from there. Okay, so I'll take the next caller. Appreciate the call. Let's see. Let's go to, well, I'll tell you what, before I go to the next caller, we only got two people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, again, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and your apps, there is a button to get into the queue. But what I'll do, because it's a little after 10 right now, let me move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready to take the mic for a short time, and then we'll come back to the open forum?
Brent, I'm here. Yeah, I'm
hey,
here.
Okay. All right, let me introduce you. This is Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com, and he's going to teach us something today. Brent, you got the mic. After Brent speaks, we'll then go back to open forum. Go ahead, Brent.
Okay, thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. I'm going to talk a little bit about the jury trial, but I want to mention that we're teaching that class still on how to draft a common law asset protection trust, and you can go to commonlawyer.com and see how to access that meeting. You can also find the Good Book Uncooked, The Common Lawyer Translates and Annotates the Bible from the Original Tongues, 15,000 footnotes, explaining how I translate it and why, I suppose. And the Comparative Law Text, Excellence of the Common Law, and other books about more particular subjects of a United States Constitution. For example, the Fifth Amendment, the militia, the right to remain silent, the Fifth Amendment, Fourth Amendment. Let's talk about jury trial. Now, this is taken from Appendix 113 of the Good Book Uncooked, 150 appendices. This is Appendix 113, tracing themes through the warp and the woof of the text of the context of the Bible. Our right to trial by jury is constitutionally protected. The Constitution says this in all criminal prosecutions, Amendment 6, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. Now that's in the criminal prosecution. What about non-criminal? Well, it says it suits at common law, that's Amendment 7 of our Constitution. Now this is in the federal courts, of course. But it obtains in the state courts, too, most of them, most all of them. In suits at common law, where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right to trial by jury shall be preserved. Well, even if you got rid of the $20 requirement, which our courts don't accept anymore, you have to plead a certain amount of money to get into federal court these days, but still, in a non-criminal trial...
Hey, just a quick note here. You know, $20 back in the day when, you know, that was an ounce of gold. Matter of fact, it was $19.94 was equal. So it was 20 silver dollars equaled 1 ounce of gold.
That's good.
And that was true until the beginning of the 1900s. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, when I went to law school, went to the federal courts, learned about civil procedure, the requirement was you had to plead at least $10,000 or more than $10,000 in damages. And then it went to $50,000 years later. And now, years later beyond that, it's $100,000. And that all comes because the Federal Reserve Bank is fiddling with weights and measures contrary to the Constitution. And Congress is allowing it. So that's why, of course, we're suffering with the highest inflation we've suffered in 40 years right now as I speak. So the value of money should be constant. Congress has a duty under the Constitution to ensure its constancy by setting the value of the dollar. But let me keep reading here. Yet, our common law's trial by jury arises not from our United States Constitution, but reaches back into time out of memory. Further, our law of the land's trial by jury is adversarial by one's country, standing in stark contrast to the law of the city's inquisition by government. Trial by jury has benefits unknown to inquisition by government. Now, these are contrasting the two fundamental traditions of religion, law, and government, the only two the world has. And all people and all governments are either moving toward the one or toward the other. There is no third option. And different names are used to describe these two traditions of religion, law, and government. But one of them is the law of the land, trial by jury, and versus inquisition by government. Well, trial by jury has benefits unknown to inquisition by government. For instance, opportunity of bribery to throw the case either one way or the other is all but precluded by trial by jury. Jurors are far less subject to bribery than a mere employee of the state called a judge, because jurors in any particular trial are unknown right up until the time jurors are called into the jury box, and not only unknown to the contesting parties and their attorneys, but also to the jurors themselves. But of 12 men taken by random selection, chances are strong that the verdict of at least one will be honest and even correct. And since a true common law jury requires a unanimous verdict, that one juror can stop the verdict of the other 11. Well, it's not really a verdict unless it's 12, but I'm searching for words to describe this. Why a dozen jurors? The question. Why a dozen? At common law, the English jury, modern and ancient, typically used 12 jurors. Most juries in the United States impanel 12 jurors. It appears that this dozen arose out of ancient custom, reaching back to even before Jesus Christ, choosing 12 to witness the evidence of his identity. He impaneled 12 men. A jury. To God's prolific use of the jury, 12 to structure Israel's government. Luke 22, 14 and 30, Matthew 10, 1 through 4, Exodus 24, 4, and Joshua 4, 2. You know, if you didn't get those written down, you can go back and listen to what I say in the archives. But some states use as few as 6 jurors, and that's not a jury, even though they say it is. The United States Supreme Court has found that a 5-member jury is too small to achieve the fair play of due process. Remember, I talked a while ago about fair play. That's what due process is. Let me read from this case of the U.S. Supreme Court, 1978, Ballew versus Georgia. Here it is. For centuries, the jury has consisted of 12 men. In the book Guide to English Juries from the year 1682, says the Supreme Court, It is said, in analogy of late, the jury is reduced to the number of 12. Like the prophets were 12 to foretell the truth, the apostles were 12 to preach the truth, the discoverers of the land were 12 sent into Canaan to seek and report the truth, and the stones were 12 that the heavenly Jerusalem is built upon. Now that's the U.S. Supreme Court quoting the English Guide to Juries. The original Older Testament, I'm not quoting the court now, the original Older Testament Hebrew text clumped the 12 shortest of the 17 prophets, nowadays called the Minor Prophets, into one book called the 12. John Henry Wigmore, common lawyer, and a common lawyer that focused on the law of evidence, said this: jurors are selected, thus elected, but their tenure is temporary, unlike certain career judges and politicians. He continues, the grand solid merit of jury trial is that the jurors are selected at the last moment from the multitude of the people. They cannot be known beforehand, and they melt back into the multitude after each trial. The jury is a tyranny determined. An enjoyment of the right to a trial by jury and tyranny and crime grow, swell, and overcome. Any enjoyment to the right of the right to trial by jury and tyranny and crime will grow, swell, and overcome. It is easier to coerce, bribe, blackmail, and threaten the jury of 12 men impaneled according to the course of our common law than it is to coerce, bribe, blackmail, and threaten a lone employee of the state called a judge. Now, I got that backwards. It is not easier. I read that wrong. It's easier to bribe a judge than it is a juror. That's the point we're trying to drive at here. We don't want to miss. This fellow, his name is Sir John Maynard, a common lawyer from England, said this: trial by jury is our fence and protection against all frauds and surprises and against all storms of power. U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist accords with what this other lawyer said. This is in Park Lane Hosiery Company versus Shore from the year 1979. Rehnquist wrote this: many who oppose the law of the use of juries in non-criminal trials seem to ignore that the founders of our nation considered the right of trial by jury in non-criminal cases an important bulwark, B-U-L, against tyranny and corruption, a safeguard too precious to be left to the whim of the sovereign, or it might be added, to the whim of the judiciary. In other words, he's saying judges. Jury versus democracy. Jury, the whole idea of jury, it's, of course, a central feature of our common law. It's contrary to the idea of democracy, and it is contrary, by the way, to the idea of republicanism. And remember that democracy, the words were democracy and republic, are Greek words given, coming to us from the Greeks who invented those ideas, and they made no distinction between democracy and republican. A democracy was a republican government, and a republican government was a democracy. And again, I hasten to add, our Constitution says that the general government in Washington, D.C. guarantees to every state a republican form of government. But that doesn't mean that these governments are republics. There's a big difference. The only thing that means, and our courts have even said this, our Supreme Court has said this, is that a republican form of government means that you have seated a legislature. That's all it means. And the U.S. Supreme Court, refuses to go further with that. Because the jury is not majority-driven, the unavoidable lawlessness of democracy is contrary to the jury. In fact, the jury demands absolute agreement of 12 men, whereas democracy would only require 7 of 12 to agree. In this day of man's government, given that the court follows the course of our common law, the unanimous agreement of the jury in individual instances is without appeal. Thus, the juror is said to be lawgiver. That's what the Bible calls the juror, lawgiver with a little L, not a big L. In other words, the final decider of right and wrong in individual instances down here on land. The maker of all things, our God, is the lawgiver, big L, final decider of right and wrong in individual instances, from whose decision there is no appeal in the entire universe. But God did say this, and this is heavy. He said, if you follow my process, and trial by jury is part of that process, he told the judges of Israel, if you follow my process, be not afraid of the face of any man, because the judgment, the din, the final result, is mine, if you follow my process, if you use the jury properly, if you follow fair play, if you do not allow, for instance, more than three witnesses to prove any material fact, if you require at least two witnesses to prove a material fact, if you do all of these things that I've laid down as proper process, be not afraid. Be not afraid, because the judgment is mine. I'll take responsibility for that. Thus, a juror, being a lawgiver with a lowercase L, is no representative of the people. Your legislator, your congressman, your senator, your state legislator is a representative of the people. The juror is no representative of the people. No. The juror is a representative sample of the people, and there's a wide difference between the two. He's not there to represent anybody. He's there to listen, witness the evidence, like the 12 so-called disciples of Jesus Christ. Witness the evidence and deliver a verdict. He's not beholden to anybody, and he's required to deliver it no matter what the other 11 jurors do or say. And they get real ugly sometimes, as a matter of fact, pretty often, with their collective wisdom as they are found to rule on the facts of the case next to voting. No, their activity is as participatory as the jury duty. The right to jury trial is by one's peers is the cornerstone of individual freedoms, our U.S. Constitution. Our U.S. Constitution's Bill of Rights guarantees accordingly, in criminal cases, the government cannot lawfully take one's enjoyment of life, liberty, or property, or a combination thereof, until all 12 jurors determine one's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And also, in non-criminal cases, the jury is to be the country's conscience as well. Bottom line, the jury deliberates without government interference. Government officials attempt to interfere or otherwise tamper with jury deliberations. If they do that, they render the verdict void because such interference violates the law of the land. And that's what our Constitution says is our supreme law. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Back to you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Hey, I did check to see. It did go through. I got an email back telling me that it went through, so you should have that in your box.
Okay.
Yeah, if you could take a quick look at it, that if you have the time in the next day or so, because I really want to get this book published. But it shouldn't take you long, because if you just go right through that list, it'll hit your brain, and you may just see, hey, I think you missed this or that, you know?
Well, I'm having trouble, so when we get off here, please text to me on your phone the email you sent it to. Maybe that helps solve my
problem. I think I sent it to a common lawyer at gmail.com, I think. But I'll double-check that in a short, okay?
Thanks.
All right, thank you. And, yeah, I'll send you, I'll drop a text in your Skype.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
okay, we'll go back to our open forum now. Let's see. I want to hit that wrong button again. Okay, we have two people in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, a star 6 and a 1. Let us take, it looks like, Robbie. You got the mic, Robbie. Go right ahead.
Hey there. I just had one question. Your form for the COS form for recall, I noticed as I was glancing it, for elected officials. Mm-hmm. What form are you using, or is it the same for appointed of officials?
Well, if a person is appointed, you can't recall them because they weren't elected. But what you do is you find out that person who was appointed was appointed by someone who was elected. So you go after the elected individual that appointed that person. You let them know what's going on, tell them to fix the problem. You know, of course, be nice and everything. And if they refuse to fix the problem, then you can deal with that person to remove them from office. Because that's the process. If what the person that has been appointed is doing is unlawful and criminal, okay, then you can seek a grand jury indictment. We're not set up for that. You're not going to get them to do, you know, the existing court processes. You're not going to get anyone to do an indictment that way. Once we, the people, take back control, because that court is ours, it doesn't belong to them, it should be run totally by the people. Of course, there is a magistrate that sits in the process, whether it's a judge who wears a magistrate cap or a magistrate, period. They're just a traffic cop, keep things going and apply the rules. Once we get our people in there, them being we the people, throughout the counties, then you'll be able to go down and speak to the administrators. The administrators can fix a lot of problems because they would be like, if you go into the way the process originally was sent up, if you go into the Magna Carta, if a problem arose, they would send four individuals. That's why we got the idea of four administrators. They would send four of the people would go to fix the problem. If the four could not fix the problem and they come back to the 25, they can try to and convince the 25 to do something, then they can pursue it in a different matter. Now, you know, the grand jury has the ability to offer an individual that has committed a crime of some kind, and they have the opportunity to fix the problem if they injured somebody. And as long as they get both agreed to, kind of do an arbitration. But if not, of course, they have the option of indictment. Now, indictment should be brought to the grand jury by a sheriff. And that's why it's important to educate our sheriffs and to have these sheriffs, working with these sheriffs. We should have a very close relationship with the sheriffs. The administrators of the grand jury should have a close relationship with the sheriff. And, of course, the committees of safety should have a close relationship to the sheriff.
Yeah, Dave, hang on a minute. Hang on.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Brian.
You may hang up or press 1 for more audio.
Okay, I guess he's got his mic open on the phone. Anyway, there is a we need to work with our sheriffs. Now, a lot of people think that the sheriffs are bad guys, and some of them are. You know, I kind of frown on the sheriff you and I spoke about, so I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But, you know, generally speaking, a sheriff it doesn't know the law. He doesn't know anything. He's totally ignorant to things, and he depends on the county attorney to give him advice. And therefore, he's really yielding his authority up to the county attorney. This is his job. He should know the law. He should know. He's the law. He's the law. What would you call it? Law enforcer. And we have to educate our sheriffs, and once you start educating your sheriffs, they may have their moment and realize, wow, you know, I really didn't know any of these things, and then start to grow a backbone, step up, and start doing his job, you know. So that's what we have to do.
Well, just a quick note. Remember I told you about, see, now the problem with the conjunction in Florida.
I agree with you. Man, that's a problem,
Now, what you need to also keep in mind is this. The attorney general is the main prosecutor who takes children and prosecutes, wrongfully prosecutes parents in the dependency courts, while the sheriff's conjunction with CPS, who are, I told you, the same, one and the same there, together. Also, you need to also understand the governor also is a conspirator and promotes that and works together with the taking of the children and refuses to put a stop to it as well.
Right. Well, look, this problem is solvable. It's not solvable on this side of devolution, but we can start the process to prepare for solving that problem. So when we get to the other side of devolution, and devolution will finish its play out, or will go into major play sometime this year. There's no doubt about that. But here's
the governor and the attorney general are elected, as well as the sheriff is elected.
Right.
Now, remember, the sheriff in office right now is not the sheriff that started this. That system I told you about has been in Florida, is embedded in the
Florida
for a long time.
It doesn't matter how embedded it is. I'm going to tell you how to fix the problem. Again, you can't fix the problem until we get to the other side of devolution, because we have the law to rest in. We can apply the law, push the law. And again, that could be done in conjunction between the committees of safety, the jury administrators, working together. And this is how it would go. Look, it is true, the attorney general is an individual who was elected. He's the chief prosecutor of the county, okay? And of course, he has assistant attorneys, and they do the prosecution. The way the process is now is the only one that goes in to talk to the grand jury is the prosecutor. That's unlawful. It's unjust. It's wrong. Okay, that cannot happen and needs to be stopped. We, the people, will stop that, okay, by pressing and pushing forward the law. But we have to have the courts of justice. We have to get rid of all these criminals first. And whatever criminals are left over, we'll indict them. We'll just get rid of them ourselves. And on a federal level, it is Congress's job to impeach a judge that is in bad behavior. A bad behavior is a judge that is not being obedient to the Constitution. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. If he violates the true law, then he is in bad behavior, and he needs to be removed by impeachment. But we, the people, can still indict a judge, and that judge then would be removed from office because of that indictment. And so we can deal with that problem. We have to, again, get the committees of safety, educate the sheriff, get the backbone to a sheriff, start obeying the law the proper way. It's the sheriff's job or the coroner to bring a case before a grand jury. If a prosecutor wants to bring a case before the grand jury, he has to go convince the sheriff that he's got a case. He's got to give all his evidence, lay it out, and the sheriff's got to look at it and say, hey, I don't see a case here, forget about it. Or he say, yeah, I see a case, and then he brings it to the grand jury. Then it's up to the grand jury, we the people, to decide whether we're going to indict or not. And then if the indictment goes through, then, of course, a free and independent jury must be the judge in the process of the court. And that's how it's got to work, and that's where we got to fix it. We've got to bring it back that way. We've got to get bar attorneys away from these juries, because they have done nothing but polluted them with their civil law and all of their they've poisoned the whole system. They've poisoned our court. They poisoned our political process. They poisoned our medical fields, our religion. They polluted our entire republic. They have polluted these people, the ones who understand, the bar attorneys that understand exactly what's going on. They're the minions of the New World Order. And the other ones that don't really understand but believe it, they're just useful idiots, but they're part of the minions of the New World Order, and they're executing the process of Satan, ultimately, you know, bringing in Babylonian law Roman law, or whatever you want to call it, Justinian law, it's all the same, municipality law, it's all the same. They're bringing all that stuff in, and they're kicking out the common law, and they're kicking out the maxims of common law, which are the rules of common law, and they bring in their own poison. This whole thing has got to be fixed. Only the people can fix that problem.
That's right. Well, remember, the dependency court, unfortunately, it's always a star chamber, you know. Remember that. And also in Florida, coroner also, which I'm aware of them, I know the law about them, they don't have a clue of their job. They don't do anything there except work on the dead.
Well, remember, it's up to us. It's up to we, the people, to fix the problem. And we need to go in with olive branches. Look, once all the real hardcore criminals are taken out, there are hundreds of thousands. This is not an exaggeration. Anybody following along with what's really going on, sort of behind the scenes, getting the rest of the story, not in the crazy news on TV, but getting the real story, they understand what's happening and that devolution is in play. When devolution finishes, once it starts the process and really moves real headstrong along, there's hundreds of thousands, plural, of indictments that are out there sealed, ready to be opened and applied. the military to move, make major arrests across this nation, in every state, dealing with all these people. Now, once all that criminal, criminal enterprise is taken out, you'll still have some bad judges in there. But we'll have to. Yeah. We will give them the benefit of the doubt. We go in, and you can do this on a county level. If a judge is out of order, look, it would be up to the administrators of the grand jury. Those are the people. Those are the people that need an education. Anybody out there, let me say this very firmly, because there are people out there that are doing what we're doing. They've come from us. They've learned from us, but they're not learning the whole process. They're not educated. They're not coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. They're coming with an attitude of revenge, maybe, or whatever you want to call it, but it's an ignorant position that they're coming in from, and that's why we have to be educated. So it's up to those people that are getting educated in this process and in all of and everything we're teaching, the five courses we got going, then they'd be qualified to understand. And we can go and talk to a judge and say, hey, look, judge, this is the way it is. You've been operating this way. I know you're a bar attorney. You know, you become a judge, you're a bar judge. Matter of fact, we're going to shut the bar down. We have to shut the bar down. And that will be done by the leadership here of National Liberty Alliance, working together with all the committees of safety. And we don't need much going on at the time. As soon as devolution is playing out, at some point we're going to go into the courts and deal with this problem. Because we got to get this is subversion against the United States of America. It's subversion against our Constitution. It's destructive to our judicial process and all we are as a people. It is destructive to our republic. So we will fix the problem on that end, on the upper end, because we're going to go after the United States Supreme Court. Either they obey the law and start doing their job and start controlling the courts, the federal judiciary, which is their responsibility, okay, to oversee them, to make sure that they're not going astray and bringing in all this destructive stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you go into the courthouse in your county, which is a state courthouse in the county, and you deal with a judge. That's a problem, and you offer him the olive branch and say, we got to fix this problem because here's the law, and we're going to give you so much time to go through this. We'll talk again, and as long as you are going to obey the law, we're all good. Other than that, we're going to consider taking you before the grand jury for an indictment. And we don't want to do that, but this is what we may have to do. You can resign. You can do that, and we're good with that if that's what you want. We got to handle this correctly. We can't handle it with anger. We cannot handle it with revenge or any of that. We have to have that olive branch, okay? So that's one way. And we can clean everything up. You can clean up your town government, your village governments, your county governments, your state government, and working together, the federal government. We can clean it all up. It may take a year or two, but I'll tell you what, a year or two will be very quick. Yeah. It could be done very quickly, just working together. But we have to be communicating. We have to be exchanging information, exchanging knowledge, all on the same page, doing the same thing with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. That is the key. We take a vow to that. Every administrator takes a vow to that. And even the jury takes a vow to that. And if they break that vow, then they've broken the law ultimately. They need to be removed from their position. And we have a process for that too.
Right. Well, for the record, you need to know that no one in any of those Florida counties have bonds, surety bonds.
In my book, I cover surety bonds. We put a lot of information, and we refer you back to the people that are working with surety bonds. There is a group of people
they've committed too many crimes.
Say that again.
They're not bondable. They've committed too many crimes and refused to leave office.
Right. If they're not bonded, they lose their office. They need to be removed from office. They're not in office if they're not bonded.
They have it on the record, and they still retain their office because no one will remove them.
Well, they're getting away with it because there's injustice in the courts. Once we get to the other side of devolution, or when devolution is in play at some point in time, and we start moving into the courts to bring justice back into the courts, to bring the common law back into the courts, the rules of the common law back into the courts, and start to clean house from the county level, okay, that is when everything's going to change. And I'll tell you, once we get rid of the criminal enterprise that's been controlling the entire world for quite some time, okay,
yeah.
And once we get rid of the head of the snake, the remnants that are stuck back there, and a lot of these people kind of were stuck in the situation, stuck between a rock and a hard place. They had to play ball, and then they become criminals themselves. Instead, what they should have done was the right thing. They should have denied it, resigned, and walk away, go do something else. They should not have participated. But we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. And but here's the other problem. You know, we have a judge here in this general area that up in, I think it's up Greene County or some county, one up here in northern New York here. And he was boasting on his retirement that he had given over 1 million years of jail sentences, you know, during his career as a judge. And that's a pretty sad statement. It's a sick statement. And it's sad that he didn't even understand what he's really saying, that was really horrible. First of all, I'm not sure what kind of a judge he was. He might have been a town judge. He might have been a judge in the state court. I don't know. But the thing is that these people have put people in jail that don't belong there. Now, they have to stop. And the problem is this. A person like that has injured a lot of people, okay? And when we get to the side of justice and people start to realize, boy, I can go after this judge because, you know, he did this, that, or the other thing unlawfully, and they're going to be sued, and even criminal activities could be brought against them. But that wouldn't be coming from us as the people, you know, in the committee of safety or the jury administrators. We want to come with the olive branch. But the injured parties may step up and bring their case before the jury and the grand jury, and first to the sheriff, and the sheriff brings the case to the grand jury if it's criminal. If it's not criminal but there's an injury, they can bring it directly to the administrators, and the administrators could bring it before the grand jury for consideration. But we always want to include the sheriff in that anyway, because the sheriff is the key part of our courts of justice to get your indictments properly done, because he's the guy he will see when a state is going after someone unlawfully and is making things up and brings charges against the people and goes to get their indictment. He's now going to be blocked by the sheriff. And the sheriff's going to see the evidence and see right through this and say, no way, forget about it. You see, this is the important part of our common law process. Remember, the sheriff works for the king. We, the people, are the king.
Well, how's this for a sixth statement? An attorney says directly to you, and I won't say that person's name, a blasphemous word, directly to you, to your face, in his office, behind closed doors, F-U-C-K, the mm-hmm. Constitution.
Yeah. Well, obviously that sheriff probably needs to be removed. And I'll remove the word probably. That sheriff needs to be removed because that is an extreme. That's extreme, okay, to say that about mm-hmm. the Constitution. He doesn't belong in that office. And you people in that county, in the Committee of Safety, you can recall that judge and have him out of that sheriff. You can recall him and have him out of office in 90 days and bring in a special election for a sheriff. Meanwhile, the undersheriff could take the reins of the sheriff's job and he can be maybe the guy that wants to run for election. But as long, even though he's been working with the sheriff, as long as he doesn't have that attitude and he's willing to learn and to do the right thing to execute the law properly, then we'll work with him, and that's fine too. And I'm sure that that's right. What would happen if you go to remove a sheriff. The undersheriff's going to take a second thought before he continues to pursue the process of the sheriff before him, his boss. But anyway, I got to move to the next caller. We got two people, and we're running close to late. Appreciate the call.
All right.
And again, I want to make an announcement here. Anybody that wants to become a national leader, let me see. Let me get to the page here. Where is this? Oh, yeah, let me go to the directory here. That's where I got to go. District leaders. Anybody who wants to become a district leader, we have 10 districts, okay, and we need district leaders. Basically, it is really working with the committees of safety within your district. Right now, we have one person for each of these 10 different districts. Actually, I think we only have 9. We have one person filling in for it until someone else takes their place back. But we need another two or more district leaders in each one of these 10 districts. And basically their job is communicating information from National Liberty Alliance, either you give them, bringing them education, connecting them with members within their county or within their state, assisting them in every way we can with information and knowledge in order to create a grand to create a committee of safety. So these people are what would be called the Committee of Correspondence for National Liberty Alliance, working with the committees of safety within the respective states here. We need help. So anybody who wants to volunteer for that position, we'd appreciate it. I would suggest that it's probably going to maybe require maybe 2 hours a week of your time. I don't know that it will take more than that. As long as we can get enough people to work the position so no one's overloaded. We need help. So anybody interested in help, send your information to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Say, hey, I'm a member here at National Liberty Alliance. I'd like to become a district leader. And our next meeting for the district leaders will be next Monday at 7:30 p.m. right here in this room. 7:30 next Monday right here. And next week, the next Monday, we're going to go through the duties and district leaders. So, again, we need help. Anybody's got some management skills, we can use some management also. Okay, I'm going to take our next caller. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ross. Ross, you should be unmuted now. You got the mic. Good to hear from you. Good to see you, Ross. Ross, you should be unmuted. Let me double check. Have you been unmuted? Oh, maybe not. Let me try to unmute you. Let me try hitting next question, see what happens. Okay, that was one. Next question. That should be Ross. Oh, no, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
I'll take, who's this, Ryan?
Yes, sir, Ryan.
Okay, I'll take Ryan. Ross, I'll get you next. I don't know why you're not, mic isn't unbuttoned, but Ryan, go right ahead. You got the mic.
So I actually sent you an email. I don't know if you answered the questions earlier in the show.
What was the question?
Well, so I'm in a situation where I've been taking your classes. I've been taking classes at Jurisdictionary, I think it's called. I've been taking a whole bunch of classes so I can prepare.
Well, Jurisdictionary is a course that I had taken. It's written by a lawyer. It's all, yep, civil law. I used it in order to learn the procedure and processes of the court, how motions work, and how the paperwork flows, and all of, but, you know, I ignore some of this stuff. And I put that up there for people who want to, get jurisdiction. I think the guy, when I did it, he charged me $300. I think he went up a little higher on that. But I have to admit, it was worth it for me. It really gave me a good insight on how things work. And then I took it from there, did a lot of research, worked with that, and then I wrote the book Court Access. Court Access and the Common Law, which, again, is going to be available this week. And I don't know what the price is going to be on that book, but it's a hardcover book. It's got, let me go back to my page here. Hang on a second. I should be able to hit the back button here. Okay, yeah, this book here, Court Access and the Common Law, it's 716 pages. My Government by Consent book is 894 pages. But this 716 pages is like over 1,000 pages, well over 1,000 pages, because it's 8.5 by 11 is the book, whereas the other one is something like 9 by 5 or something, whatever that dimension is on a paperback. So that'll be available for a lot less money. It'll bring the common law to play. Got a lot more things going on in that book than what I learned in jurisdictionary. So it's something you might want to consider getting. And of course, all the proceeds of my book goes to support the National Liberty Alliance, ultimately, of course. So, but what was the, any what was the other part of your question? Because I
my question is I'm trying to just give you like a background of where I'm at. So, long story short, I'm in a civil case. A judge ruled against the law, as in like there was a statute that governed his authority, and he ruled against the statute. So the petitioner, it's a domestic abuse restraining order. The petitioner didn't meet her burden of proof, and he still ruled in her favor, granting an injunction.
Well, and look, on something like that, this is where this book will come into play. If you have some basic knowledge of the courts and somewhat of the procedures, this book's going to be really great for you if you have some basics. And even if you don't, it's going to be great to spending time working with it. And if you have to go to court, you'll be able to defend yourself. Nobody should wait until the day you go to court. Think not that you won't end in court, because there's a good possibility you will at some point in time end up in a court for something. But in any event, what I would do, and again, putting this book together, I got more insight, more things that I'm thinking of what I can do and how can I do something in a court in a different way where I couldn't get success one way, force the judge to do something another way. I would start off, once the judge breaks the rules, doesn't go forward, first thing you want to look at, first of all, is jurisdiction, see if they got it. You want to challenge jurisdiction. Likelihood is they don't have jurisdiction. They probably don't have personam jurisdiction. They may not even have subject matter jurisdiction. In some cases, they don't even have that. But that's one thing. The next thing, the judge is going to ignore you. He's going to do this, that, or the other thing. And what you want to then do is put forward a quo warranto. Okay? In my book, I cover the quo warranto. So you can go and follow the instructions on that, file a quo warranto against the judge, and if there is, of course, a prosecutor or someone in the case, you file it against both of them. And basically, they have to answer it, they have to deal with it, and it's a requirement of giving, first of all, the bonds, their oaths, their bonds, and it really puts them on notice that, you're ready to do something because they're not obeying the law. Now, there are other things that you could do. There's quite a few different writs, and if you go through the writs and start thinking about your case and consider certain writs, you might be able to use certain other writs in order to do other things. The big thing is jurisdiction. If you study what's going on, what is their authority, what is the court, if it's a village court, a town court, or a county, well, a county court, leave that aside, village court and a town court, I guess basically those two, they don't have jurisdiction over you. They're totally equity courts. They deal with commercial activities. They can deal, of course, with administrative problems and activities within the county. So if someone is working for the government, and they can deal with that problem if they broke the law or whatever the case may be. They could deal with traffic infractions, but that's commercial. Has nothing to do with me or you, unless you're operating a commercial vehicle. Transporting in a commercial fashion. So at that point, you challenge jurisdiction. You do a quo warranto if they're not obedient, and that's where the process starts. Habeas corpus, which requires due process, and moving that into an upper court. If I do a habeas corpus, I always go into the federal court because it's a violation of due process. It's a constitutional issue, and the federal court has jurisdiction over that. If you took it to the state, I guess you could. It's debatable on their jurisdiction. The point is, it's a U.S. constitutional issue. You got to take it to the federal court. And their purpose is only in this case is to champion the Constitution. And so again, it's just like pulling teeth to get that happen. It can be done. It has been done occasionally, but generally it's ignored. And the same problem in the federal courts as in the lower courts. But that's where it starts, and again, devolution is in play. Once we get to a certain point, everything's going to change. You're going to start to see justice return to the courts as long as the people pursue it and push it. If the people don't step up to do it, to get back their heritage, to demand the law to be obeyed by all of these criminals, well, they may not all be criminals anymore at some point, but all of these people, they need to obey the law. But it's up to the people to do it. We have governed by the consent of the people. That is the foundation of our law. It's in the Declaration of Independence. That's who we are, and our law is common law. Declaration of Independence, again, it is clear on the table. And that's what we need to apply. But if the people refuse to get knowledge, to learn the science of law, of common law, and get involved with a little bit of their time, then we don't deserve liberty, and you won't have liberty, because liberty requires knowledge of the law. Your heritage is in the law, okay? That's where your heritage is. It's in the law. And if you don't know the law, you don't know what your heritage is. And if you don't know what your heritage is, you don't know how to defend yourself nor with your rights. You don't really have rights that you can execute and pursue, because the government is going a different direction here. We need to bring them back into their place, and as Jefferson speaks about, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And that's what we're going to do. That's what I'm going to do. And anybody that's doing this, that's what you should be doing. And we need this happening in every county across America in order to win this nation back. This is a republic. We are a people of law. And we are governed by the consent of the people. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people, are the consenters. We, the people, ordained. We, the people, are the lawmaker. We're the final word. We, the people, decide whether we're going to give an indictment or not. We, the people, decide whether someone is innocent or guilty. We, the people, decide what the penalty might be with an eye on restitution to the injured party. This is what we need to do. If we fail to do it, you don't deserve any liberty, because you're just not doing what needs to be done. This is a duty of every American. And anybody who's hearing this message and being woken up to the realization of this, and you fail to act, then woe is you. You know, you're part of the problem. And it doesn't matter that you don't want to do it. Everybody's got time to do it. We're looking at people given maybe 4 hours a month. That's it, in the Committee of Safety. 2 hours for a meeting and 2 hours of a little bit of work every month in the committee, in the subcommittees that you're involved with, whether it's the Committee of Education to bring proper education back into our schools, or the Judicial Committee working with the jury administrators, or the Political Committee working with the political things and bringing all this information to the General Committee, which is the true committee men that decide on and make these things go and decide what they're going to do and how they're going to go forward to bring the law back to bear upon these government agencies and agents. So it's up to us. We got to do it. Nobody else can do it.
I got one more quick thing for you.
Yeah.
So the National Liberty Alliance is working on bringing the grand jury back and all that. What about like Anna Von Wright and all these other people who are creating their own assemblies and things like that?
And that's all unlawful. What they're doing is not compatible with us. It's unlawful. They are self-appointing judges, self-appointing prosecutors, self-appointing postal workers, self-appointing all these things. They want to rewrite the Constitution. They don't think it's good enough. They're creating a shadow government, which is subversion. It's tyranny. It's subversion is what it is. Okay. So, I mentioned earlier that we've had about six people out west that went to jail. We knew they were going to go to jail. We told them they were going to go to jail. We told them to stop. We kicked them out. We had to kick them out, and they ended up going to jail. They were following the Pied Piper, Anna Von Ritz. And again, I don't really want to talk bad against somebody, but it has to be said. People have got to understand, if you want to get yourself in trouble, follow that assembly. I think it's called the Jural Assembly or the Jural something.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree completely. What do you think of David Strait?
David Strait's an interesting guy. I heard about him not long ago. I might have seen some of his stuff in the past. And I heard about him recently, and I went out, and someone gave me a 2.5-hour thing on him, which gave me a good idea. There was not much that he had to say that I disagreed with. The only thing I did disagree with is his... is how he wants to solve the problem. He's going in and fighting the problem on their level with their words, with their fiction and their problems. Yeah, it is a denial of that. I understand that. But that's not how you're going to win that case. It is really very simple how to win that case, okay? And it really deals with the fact that these people have no authority in doing what they're doing. The whole thing, which is fiction, the whole thing is fraud. Call it for what it is, fraud. Bring charges of fraud against them. We come with an olive branch. We offer a correction. We offer a way out. They refuse to take it. We start to pursue the legal process, and we end up potentially with indictments. And that's how we're going to deal with that problem. And it's so important that we deal. First order of business is building your organization, getting maybe, 15, 20 people together and getting sitting down and working up all of your paperwork. You want to get your charter and resolutions together. You want to get your seal. You want to put it together in a nice package. All of this is in the book on Committee of Safety, creating a Committee of Safety. So the handbook, you just follow that whole process. But the first order of business is getting that sheriff on board with you, getting a copy of the book, Government by Consent, making sure that he is primed before your second meeting. The first meeting is really a 5 or 10 minute meeting where you produce your paperwork. You already know that he's been primed with a book. He may not have read it yet, but your paperwork and the fact that you mentioned the book, it's going to get him to look at that book. He'll read your paperwork. And he's going to agree. There's no way he can disagree with the paperwork if you follow the process we set up by putting together a charter and the resolutions, because it lays it out in a very simple manner who we are, what we're doing, how we're approaching, and by what law and authority we act on. And so once you go through all of that and you give that to the sheriff and you say, okay, look, we'd like to get together with you and discuss these things in 2 or 3 weeks, and you set a date to meet them. The first meeting is only a 5-minute meeting. Introduction. Give them the paperwork, and now let them do some studying, because we want to talk to you. And it should go well if he's a decent person and is interested in his job and is capable of understanding the fact that he is the top law enforcer and that his enforcement of the law ultimately is the Constitution, both the U.S. and the state Constitution. And once he understands that, and that we're under common law, and remember, everything we do, okay, everything we've written, okay, it's backed by, it's certified. We are documented, certified documentation. It proves everything we do. Thousands, in my first book, I don't even know, maybe a couple of thousand footnotes. I have to go look in my court access book. Lots of footnotes. You know, anything you do, any paperwork you write, footnotes are the key to really making your case absolutely crystal clear. Footnotes and memorandums. You make the conclusion of what your memorandum of law is. Maybe it's a conclusion on whatever it is on, the Second Amendment or something. And you come to the conclusion, you put it in, and you refer to the memorandum law and the Second Amendment or whatever it is that you're battling. You want to keep your paperwork clean and to the minimum, minimum amount of words and focused in, but you give the educational part. You make your case to prove things, A, number one, through footnotes, B, number two, with memorandums of law. And so the case doesn't get full of a lot of clutter and confusing and, can't figure it. It's like spaghetti and you're trying to, untangle everything. So you have to learn to write. And the best way to learn to write is read papers, You could read our papers, and we got a lot of examples in the book. But go ahead, back to you.
This will be the last thing that I'll head off here. I want to help. I definitely want to be a part of the NLA. Will you accept somebody who's a state national or no?
Yeah, we don't care.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm state national. So.
Yeah, well, look at you're one of the people. That's the key thing.
Yes, sir.
Right? I think, and I understand why you went through the process. I was going to go through that process. I did my declaration. I filed it in the county clerk and all that other stuff. And, those were my days that I was learning off other people, but I wasn't researching. But I started getting conflicting information, and I realized, that I need to look further into it. And, of course, we're building National Liberty Alliance to do things. And so we had to really research everything and reconsider everything. and we moved away from the man on the land stuff, getting rid of your license, getting rid of your birth certificate, dealing with that and becoming a nationalist. And I mean, all those things, all it does is it kowtows to the fiction. It says, you won, we lost our country, we lost our courthouses, we lost our government, we lost everything. And unfortunately, people who do that, they don't realize if you think it out, you don't think you're going to walk into court and produce your declaration and make the point that you're not a citizen and you have no power and authority, and you're going to click your heels together and be transported into a court of justice. It's not going to happen. They're going to come down on you harder than they would on a person that didn't do that. But look it, you're arguing with the fiction on their terms. No, I'm going to argue against the fiction on using natural law. They're going to deal with our terms, and it's very simple. One word, fraud. That's it. All fiction is all fraud. They don't have the power, they don't have the authority to do all the things they've done and what they're doing. We could take it all away, but one person can't fix the problem. United we stand, divided we fall. We have to work together. You know, you get a couple of hundred people in a county, and believe me, that'll swell up a lot quicker, a lot bigger than that, and a lot quickly. You get 100 people, I tell you, by the end of the year, you might have 1,000 people, 500 people, because it's going to become very popular. The word will cut out, the power and the authority that's being seen, bringing justice back, getting control of the political process, bringing back a proper education in our school. I mean, the lists go on and on and on. And who wouldn't want to be involved with this? Who doesn't want to step up there and secure our liberty, to secure our heritage for ourselves and our posterity? Who doesn't want to do that? You know, people who aren't paying attention ultimately are the ones that don't want to do it. But those who hear and those who understand, those are the ones that will be held accountable at some point, at the end of their life or whatever. You're not doing what you got to do. Because ultimately, by we doing what we need to do to bring common law back into play in this nation, you know what we're doing is at the end of the day, without even realizing it, you don't even have to bring this issue up. You're bringing the king back into the court. And the king is the Lord. That's who the king is. God is the Lord. The 12 jurists, they serve the king. It's called the king's bench. Okay, they have to do the will of the king. They have to operate with a sense of honor, with a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. They have to apply the law of the land. And that's what the king requires. And so, you know, the king is in our court with the eyes on justice, but he himself doesn't issue it himself. Well, ultimately, through the Holy Spirit, he does if we are moving in back into a Christian nation and operating under these terms and acknowledging him as king, then he's right there anyway. You know, there I am in the midst, Jesus says. So the thing is, you know, we have to do what we have to do. Anybody who doesn't do it, shame on you now that you know and you're not doing it. Let's everybody get into the game. Let's take this nation back.
I'm right on board. I'll be emailing you. I'll do whatever I can to help. So.
Okay, I got to move on to the last caller because I got to go on the radio in a few minutes. So I only got a couple of minutes. Anybody that wants to try to plug in, if you're within 200 miles of Woodstock, New York, they broadcast to a 200-mile radius. So if you're within that area and you might be able to pull in 104.1 FM, you'll hear I'm going to be on it for probably 40 minutes or so. But I want to take, well, Ross is left. Oh, no, there's Ross. Let me take Ross, and I'm not going to be able to take any more callers after that because I got to leave one for this radio program. Ross, I only got a minute. Let me see if I can unmute you. Thanks for the call. What was that, Ryan? Was that who I spoke with? Okay, thanks for the call, Ryan, and hopefully we'll talk again. Okay, let's see if Ross gets unmuted. No, I can't unmute Ross. All right, Ross, I'll catch you next week. I can't unmute you. Maybe you're muted on your end at the same time. Look down on the bottom left of your program there, your app, and maybe you got to click a button there. Okay, anyway. We'll talk next week. See if you could fix that, Ross. I'm going to end it now. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, 9 p.m. at Eastern Time. And again, if anybody is interested in taking on the responsibility of working with National Liberty Alliance as a district leader, just send us an email, tell us you're interested, mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Make sure you put your phone number in there. And we'll get back to you and come to the meeting next Monday at 7:30, and we'll be doing orientation. Hopefully we'll be set up to finish off orientation for the leadership, and we'll take it from there. Okay, God bless everyone. See you next Monday, Lord willing. Good night.